There's a great snake-eyed, sawtooth beast we call the animation industry. Rolls over the landscape, just a chopping and a slicing and a deflavorizing on its path. We pause to remember them furry, more independent critters are running for their lives in its wake. The ones doing it for the love, trying to make their rent, trying to make their footage count, trying to get bought by Nickelodeon, trying not to get bought by Nickelodeon. As they cross the great flaming desert to the temperature-controlled vault where the grapes of wrath are stored. This is their story. These are their words. This is why you should never start smoking before you're six. It's the Animation Show Podcast.
You're listening to the Animation Show Podcast. My name is Taylor Jessen, and I am talking to Tatia Rosenthal, the director of $9.99, a feature, an animated feature, an animated indie feature that didn't take 30 years to make. Tatia, how are you, my dear?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I am good. That's one of the first things I wanted to talk about, not just because everyone should go and see this because it's a wonderful film, but I want to kind of skew to our animation community and talk a little bit about how you get an indie animated feature made. Talk about financing.
Okay, it didn't take 30 years, but it did take 10 years of financing. Okay, there was a very long, multi-layered process, I suppose, starting with my school, NYU, the School of the Arts, giving us a grant after the script was written as seed money for feature. And after that, we had support of the Sundance Institute for developing the screenplay. By the way, when I say we, it's Gal Keres, the writer of the short stories and co-writer of the script, and myself. We've been developing this for 10 years. After having the support of the Sundance Institute, we and the Maryland Producers Club. So there's been a lot of support along the way of people who wanted to see the film made, but none of it amounted for the few million dollars that it would take to make this film. In fact, producers in the U.S. Were adamant that we need to make it for under $1 million, which is just an impossibility for a stop-motion feature of any that you would want to have competitive quality. So then there was a complete fluke of circumstance. I mean, I don't think I can recommend to anybody to get themselves into that circumstance because it's so singular. An Australian producer, Emil Sherman, was looking for the right material so he could make the first Australian-Israeli co-production. And he was recommended at Gal Keres' materials by two other young writers he was working with. Met with him as Gal pitched our screenplay. At the time, I've already made a buck's worth with the grant money from NYU, which is a short film that was a demo, if you will.
Yes, a begging letter, as it were.
A begging letter, as it were. That's right. You coined that. Yes, it was a film about begging. There was a begging letter that ended with to be continued if you give us money, essentially. So at that time, that was ready and, you know, served as an example of what the film might look like. And that was it. Emil got enthusiastic about the screenplay and about the technique and about making the first Australian-Israeli co-production. And he got an Israeli producer that was working with Gal at the time as a partner. And they financed within less than a year.
That is a singular circumstance. I was going to say it has absolutely nothing to do with the way that other animated features are going to be made. But then again, it does, because they're all going to be made under extremely singular circumstances, aren't they?
Exactly. I think the moral of the story is persist.
Yes. How did you hook up with Edgar? Because the film itself is wonderfully, amazingly literary and has the way that I guess in your press kit that you describe it as a sort of threading together of lots of stories a la Shortcuts. It really is a kind of magical realist Shortcuts. I mean, the characters don't just have arcs and they don't just bell curve. They duck and run for cover, and your sympathies with them go up and down wildly, which I love very much.
Thank you. Beautiful description, by the way. That was a very poetic way to put it. Hooking up with Itzgal, I was a huge, huge fan. I got a present, as a going-away present from Israel, going to film school, one of his books of short stories. And I read it on the plane, and by the time I landed, I knew I wanted to work with him. And having made a couple of short films based on his short stories in film school, he really liked the animated version. The first one was a live-action version of Breaking the Pig, which later ends up in $9.99.
Hmm.
He was really taken by Crazy Glue, which is the stop-motion short,
yes,
and felt that a collaboration between us has something special to offer and suggested we write something longer.
Did you feel any intimidation about working on his material? I mean, if he was like a literary star a la Raymond Carver is in the United States, and suddenly someone shows up, a tape shows up on his doorstep, hey, this student did a version of your work. How did it happen that he was so gung-ho to work with you?
Well, hugely intimidated, to the first part of the question, and really eager to get his approval and to work with him again. And he was very, very clear about liking Crazy Glue very much, and there was no doubt at that point that I have his support and that he sees a mutual vision in making the film. So then it only took 5 years for me to stop being shy around him, but still.
Those things take time, I understand.
Yeah.
You made the short A Buck's Worth with Philip Baker Hall, and that is a nice standalone piece, and I was really glad that the story, if not the actual thing that you shot, became the prologue for your feature.
It always was the prologue. I mean, that was always the first scene scripted. There was a certain sadness to... We actually recorded the entire features performance with Phil Baker Hall and Tom Noonan in hopes that we get the film financed in the States, and there's always a bit of sadness to not work with somebody who you thought you would be working with on the longer format.
Interesting.
I was also incredibly excited to work with the people with Jeffrey Rush and Anthony LaPaglia on those roles. So there's, you know, it was a combination of feelings there.
Okay, so recording the voices for the feature from your description on the website sounded a little surreal, recording live in Los Angeles and in Australia. How did that work out technically?
Technically, the Australian leg of the recording got up at 4 in the morning. We were at the studio at, I don't know, 6 or 5 or something crazy. And Jeffrey and Anthony were in Los Angeles. And I was really eager to, non-classically animation recording, get as many scenes happening at the same time rather than separating the actors.
Which is great.
Schedule. Probably has to do a little bit with being my first feature and really wanting to know if I'm getting what I needed in the scene instead of imagining it.
That's very cool. I mean, I'd prefer most animation to be done that way, actually.
Interesting. You don't feel that people with experience can get equal results?
I think people with experience can get equal results, but when you put people with experience into a room together, you also get unexpected results, and that's just as good.
That's an excellent point, yeah. True. They really... Some scenes just, you know, came to life off the page, and there was almost no editing required.
Mm.
One scene, you know, between Dave and his father, Samuel Johnson, and Anthony LaPaglia, like, brought tears to the eyes of people in the room and was used as is.
Nice.
Yeah.
And directorially, you were able to send directions down the line to your remote actors?
No problem, yeah, of course.
Very cool.
It was a lot of fun. When we were done with a day or two per actor, depending on the size of the role.
You name-check Lucian Freud as a big visual influence. I checked out a lot of his work online, and I can really see how that became an influence on the design of the characters. What's emotionally interesting to you, and I guess tactically interesting to you, about Lucian's paintings?
Well, first of all, I find them beautiful, and I think they're melancholy and really expose sort of a visual representation of the human condition. I don't know. I mean, it's very hard talking about art in those terms because sometimes it's, you know,
yeah,
it's emotional and not really mathematical. But so the way he shows people, I think, has a bit of criticism and a bit of tenderness. And then also I've always wanted to have painterly puppets, and on a technical level thought that these kinds of sizes, brush strokes, and these kind of color spectrum would look good and not be too limiting and not be too difficult to get, you know what I mean, and to maintain.
It is an interesting balance you have to get because you're working with pretty large figures in terms of stop motion. You describe them as being Barbie doll size, so they're 1/6 scale with 1/5 scale hands. And to get a huge amount of detail into a face, you really have to go in there beforehand and do a lot of design work, because you're going to have limited ability to manipulate the heads. Although you can, I can see in the finished product that there's a lot of manipulation going on there. Am I guessing right when I think that you're able to deform the whole head vertically, I mean on an x-axis and a y-axis?
The heads are made of silicone, and they have a wire for eyebrows and a movable jaw system that feel beats more designed, along with designing the puppets with Moon. And the stretchiness comes from when you move the jaw down or move the eyebrows up, it stretches the silicone and gives you that little bit of give. There's definitely not so much side-to-side motion.
Gotcha. You describe in your press notes at the website how you were in those studios for 40 weeks. Was that a huge expense for you? Were you taking up a lot of real estate there? How did that work out?
Well, our line producer and producer did, you know, a lot of shopping around to try to find the best combination of a cheap space, but that didn't need too much of preparation work in terms of electricity and infrastructure, internet, you know, the work. Mm-hmm. And they came up with a place that, you know, gave us decent rent. It was all, you know, part of the budget. Not so much something I had to worry about.
Gotcha.
Other than, you know, staying on time.
What was your schedule? Did you have a festival screening that you had to make? What was your timeline aiming for?
Running out of money, really.
Okay.
Yeah. Knowing that there's no more money if we go over a certain amount of weeks.
There's an animation historian friend of mine who looks at all animation, and the first question he asks is, why was it animated? Could this have been done live action or not? And I really have to say, this needed to be animated. It was animated, and it's perfect in that world.
Thank you. Do you agree with the why does it need to be animated question?
I'm more flexible there. I think a lot more things can be animated, and a lot of things that are animated, even if they could have been done in live action, that's not a good enough reason not to animate something just because you can do it in live action. There are a lot of things you can do in live action that you probably shouldn't have if you're an animator with a strong personal style. And that certainly comes across in your feature.
I have a huge ideological problem with that question. That's why I ask. It's something that early on somebody would ask me, and I would get adversarial, because I think it's like saying, why paint and not photograph? Why photograph and not paint?
Yep.
Do this, you know, it's like saying animation is limited in its abilities, but only use it for fantastic elements. This is really what it boils down to ultimately. And usually when people ask me this, I know that there are people who are less likely to like 999. There's a certain divide. But
yeah.
I understand what you're saying. I mean, I agree completely with what you're saying. I just couldn't word it as eloquently.
Well, I was spoiled, of course, because I saw your short first, so I knew exactly what I was getting into in terms of the character design. I mean, I had to come to that conclusion just because, and there's a moment I don't want to give away to anybody, you have human characters, and then you have human characters with special attributes, and I'm not just talking Friends, and you can see this in the trailer, about the gentleman who has the angel wings. No, there's something much more interesting, which we're not going to discuss at this point, because it's too wonderful. And to have that work, to have a surrealistic moment in a film, you need a bed of surrealism, and animation is surreal. So this is an animated environment that where the characters, you're able to look at characters that are supposed to look perfectly real, and then you're suddenly confronted with an extremely surreal moment, and you buy them both.
Exactly. Exactly. I think that's exactly it. And besides, a lot of people have said the script could have been live action. Why are you doing it in animation? And I think that on top of what you said, that it makes it more cohesive, surreal and less surreal elements work together. I think also the script is slightly allegorical, and in a way that if live people were speaking the lines, you would feel that they're slightly too conceptual.
But yes.
As soon as they become a little bit removed, you watch it and think, ah, yeah, it is like that to be human.
And if this were done in
far.
Yeah, and if this were done in live action, the special effects moments, as it were, would just, I mean, even as exposed as we are to special effects that are supposed to be completely seamless, they become special effects moments, whereas this whole movie is one long special effect that you forget about after about 10 minutes. You really forget that it's animated, just like you do in any good animated feature.
I needed to have this talk with you 10 years ago. I would have this in my arsenal.
No. You needed to struggle. You needed to just be in complete pain where nobody got it, man. That's the only way
right.
you get things done.
Right. There's that.
Okay,
so... Didn't want it to be too easy.
No. Wouldn't want that. Where have you gone with the film so far? Obviously, it's opening, and I must remind my Los Angeles listeners and anyone else within the sound of my digitized bits that if you're listening to this the week of whatever this week is when I'm recording it, it is playing until Thursday in Los Angeles. You need to go. Where have you gone with the film that is playing right now in Los Angeles? Where has it played prior?
Festivals are Toronto, Rome, Busan, Copenhagen, Holland Animation Festival, and maybe a few more that escape me. And then it's going to play theatrical release in the United States, France, Canada, Australia, Russia, Israel, and a couple more countries that I do not have the details of because it's a very recent sale.
Gotcha. Well, that's good. So the sale came very recently. Was it based on the festival screenings or your Los Angeles screening?
I don't think the Los Angeles screening. Fortissimo is selling the film worldwide, and they're doing a phenomenal job, and they're doing their thing, and I only get very, infrequent reports. So I'm not sure the details of those sales yet.
And your current Los Angeles run is an Oscar qualifying run, correct?
Exactly.
Very nice. I was lucky enough to see it on opening night. There weren't a lot of us there, but there weren't a lot of people at the opening night of Office Space either. And you know what? We're all special. We're all the more special for it.
Excellent.
Damn it.
I agree. Well, I hope... after you told me that there were a few people, I was asking myself, what makes me go see a film? It's a theatrical trailer. And I think all this is going to happen next year. Nonetheless, go see it now, because... And tell your friends. And we're not talking to you, I'm talking to the audience.
Absolutely. I love what this is doing. This is a really interesting period for feature animation, just because, everybody, the public, is not, which have figured out what artists knew long ago, which is that you can do animation with virtually any genre. I think audiences are finally being able to twig that. But more than that, which is great in itself, I think it's a great time in... production terms, just because you can do an animated feature independently and it doesn't take your whole life, which is going to be very encouraging to have a lot more people start making them.
I agree. I think this year has been amazing for that. And hopefully next year even bigger.
Are you based in America full-time now? Are you able to see a lot of...
Yes, I've just seen Cedar Sings the Blues.
Nice.
In New York, yeah. I'm back in New York full-time. And which is another example for, even actually, I would say a larger example of one person making a film on a shoestring at home. Nina Paley's film. It's pretty amazing.
Absolutely. She takes the indie concept and rocks it to previously unknown degrees. Were you based in Israel before that? Would you say there's more animation or less animation distribution where you were before?
I'm here. I've been here for 15 years.
Oh.
But visiting Israel, there's the Bezalel Art Academy, for one, has been releasing generations of phenomenal animators into the marketplace and the other schools as well. And you could see their films in, student film festivals worldwide. And the question, is there finance to make something that is longer format other than commercials after that point? And... historically, the answer was almost never, but now you've had two films. One was completely made in Israel, Wassel Bashir, and then 999 that was partially supported from Israel. And there's a new animation studio in Jerusalem, and hopefully these talents could work their way through the industry in a longer format product rather than commercials.
What were you watching to convince you that you could be an animator, that you could do this? And I guess what, after that, convinced you that you could do it for a living, if you are doing it for a living? I don't know if any of us are actually doing this art thing for a living, so I always am hesitant to frame a question like that, I guess. But
well, I was never convinced until, you know, I was way in too deep. I think what inspired me, but didn't necessarily tell me I could do it, was The World According to Garp's combination of live action and animation, which was done by John Kaymaker,
yeah,
who later became my professor. Coincidentally, I think that moment was the moment that made me feel that I have to go into filmmaking and I have to use as many disciplines as possible to surprise and, you know, delight.
Very cool. And we should mention that if you're in the animation community and you're watching this film and a character comes on screen and you have a vague notion that you, where have I seen this guy before? That would be Mr. Kaymaker, wouldn't it? He plays.
It would be.
He plays the magician, which is wonderful.
Could you tell for yourself?
No, I was freaked out because I was going, I know this guy's face, and the voice and the face didn't match. But it was like, do I know him? Have I met him? And of course, so there you go. That's why I was thrown. But that's a very specialized response that you're going to get from only a small percentage of your audience goers.
Of course.
Everyone else is just going to be absorbed in the wonderful machinations of the story. And I could talk more about the film here, but I mean, it's just such a wonderful surprise, one surprise after another, inside the film itself, that you need to go out there and just experience it. And so if you don't catch it in Los Angeles this week, listeners, don't worry if you can't get the plane ticket. It's not a problem. You can see it in a theater at some undetermined future point next year.
Spring.
Spring. Very cool. I'm not shitting you when I said I felt special just going to it, because there were 8 people in the theater and we were all just stuck to our seat through the end credits, and it was like, yeah. And it was just us. So that made it all the more wonderful. I don't, and that was only the 7:40 show, okay? So don't despair. There was another show.
Surely
right after
the
that.
The 9 o'clock was standing room only.
Everybody on Wilshire was going to the 9:40 showing, I'm telling you.
Yep.
Is there anything that people haven't asked you about the making of film that you wish they had?
I can't think of anything specifically. But, you know, having made the film is a blur, so... It doesn't have to take your whole life as far as all, you know, 70 years of it, but it does take all of it while you make it.
Are you concentrating on distribution now, or do you have another new project in mind?
A little bit of both. I've optioned a children's book from Israel in hopes to make it into a slightly bigger film, you know, for the whole family, and hopefully with larger financing. And other than that, I'm writing a couple of personal projects and reading other people's projects and seeing what happens first.
Well, very cool. I wish you the best of luck with that.
Thank you, Sarah.
Tatya, thank you very much for talking to me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for putting 999 out there.